this on the table next to me.
As the Supreme Personality of Godhead, you have taken birth from my abdomen. Oh my Lord, how is that possible for the Supreme One, who has in his belly all the cosmic manifestation? The answer is that it is possible. For at the end of the millennium, you lie down on a leaf of a banyan tree, and just like a small baby, you lick the toe of your lotus foot. Purport by His Divine Grace, Esi Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada. At the time of dissolution, the Lord sometimes appears as a small baby lying on the leaf of a banyan tree, floating on the devastating water. Therefore, Devahuti suggests your lying down within the abdomen of a common woman like me is not so astonishing. You can lie down on the leaf of a banyan tree and float on the water of devastation as a small baby. It is not very wonderful, therefore, that you can lie down in the abdomen of my body. You teach us that those who are very fond of children within this material world, and who therefore enter into marriage to enjoy family life with children, can also have the Supreme Personality of Godhead as their child. And the most wonderful thing is that the Lord Himself licks His toe. Since all the great sages and devotees apply all energy and all activities in the service of the lotus feet of the Lord, there must be some transcendental pleasure in the toes of His lotus feet. The Lord licks His toe to taste the nectar for which the devotees always aspire. Sometimes the Supreme Personality of Godhead Himself wonders how much transcendental pleasure is within Himself. And in order to taste His own potency, He sometimes takes the position of tasting Himself. Lord Chaitanya is Krishna Himself, but He appears as a devotee to taste the sweetness of the transcendental mellow in Himself, which is tasted by Srimati Radharani, the greatest of all devotees. Om Agyanitirandasya Yajanjana Sadakaya Chakshurmilitam Jena Asmai Shri Gurave Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manobhishtam Sthapitam Yena Bhutale Swayam Rupa Padamayam Tathati Svapadantikam Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Yukha Padakamalam Shri Guru Vaishnavam Shri Rupam Sagra Chakam Sahakana Yadunafam Vitam Tamsa.
Devam, Sakritam, Savadutam, Parijana Sahitam, Krishna Chaitanya Devam, Sri Radha, Krishna Padam, Sahagana Lalita, Sri Vishakhanvitam Cha, Hey Krishna Karuna Sindhu, Dinabandhu Jagatpate, Gopesha Gopika Kanta, Radha Kanta Namostute, Tapta Kanchana Gaurangi, Radhe Vrindavaneshwari, Vrishabhanu Sute Devi, Pranamami Hari Priye, Vamsha Kalpa Dhruvyascha, Kripa Sindhu Vedacha, Adhitanam Bhavaviyo, Vaishnavevyo Namo Namaha, Sri Krishna Chaitanya, Prabhu Nityananda, Sri Advaita Gadadhara, Sri Vasadi Gaura Bhakta Vrinda,
Day is a day of gratitude. I'm so grateful to be with all of you. A story comes to my mind that I'd like to share with you about a beautiful lesson I learned from a mother. This was February of this year. Every year we go to Vrindavan, to the village of Barasana, where our Bhaktivedanta Hospital does save, of course, Vrijavasis, because the main reason for blindness in that area is untreated cataracts. And these Vrijavasis, it's amazing. When they come in, they're crying because they haven't been able to see the deity. They just want their eyes so that they can see the holy dham, see Thakurji, the deities in the holy dham, and render service. So these people come from very remote villages, and thousands come. It's usually we treat about 3,000 and about 1,000 surgeries. So in the meanwhile, I was walking around to see the people, and they're really crowded all over the place because it's quite primitive facilities we can use. And I came to one room which had about 20 really old Vrijavasi ladies in it. And one, she was a very tiny lady and very old. She told me she was 85. but she looked about 185. I hope she doesn't hear this. She was really beat up. I'm small, I'm 5'6". She was probably about 4'7" or something like that. Very small. And her clothes were torn rags. Her face had such deep wrinkles. They weren't even wrinkles, they were like, kind of like earthquake crevices. And she didn't have that much hair, but what was there was really looked old. Anyway, she was sitting there, very skinny little lady. And she had this gigantic nose ring in her ear. I mean, in her nose. And she had these things hanging from her ears. She was a real village lady. And I sat down to her, next to her, with a translator, and asked something about herself. She started crying. She told me that her husband recently died, that her 4 children recently died, that she had no way to maintain herself, and she was just living in a little hut, and somebody took away the hut. So she was just sleeping on the streets. She was really old, too. She said she had no one. There was no one in the world who cared about her. And she said that, and I had these 2 big cataracts in my eyes, so I can hardly see anything. She told me, I only have one prayer. I only have one prayer in my life. She said that by Radharani's mercy, by Krishna's mercy, they can take away at least one cataract. So then, I will be able to make rotis and offer them to Srimati Radharani. That is the only prayer of my life. I just want to do some seva. And somebody said, well, don't you want, you know, a place to stay and all that? Somebody would translate it. She said, I don't care about anything. I just want to make rotis for Radharani. And then she started weeping very incessantly, saying, and you people are going to take that cataract away. I cannot tell you how indebted I am to you. And she was so happy. She got up and started singing this Brijabasi song and told all the other ladies in the room to get up and dance with her. And she was doing this really mystical dance. She was dancing, and everybody else got up dancing. And then she came out of the room dancing and went into the main lobby where there's all these people waiting, hundreds of people. And interestingly, one of my good friends, his mother was visiting India. She's a multimillionaireess, and she was a secretary in her house. I've been there. She has photographs of herself with Eisenhower, with Kennedy, with Johnson, with Ford, with Nixon, with Reagan, with Clinton, everybody. And Paul Newman and Elizabeth Taylor, all these, you know, she was a state senator. She ran for the federal government, for the Senate. And there was a picture of her framed in her house. Do you remember Look magazine? The front cover of Look magazine said that she was the most powerful, prominent female politician in America. This was in the 1970s. And she was in President Carter's cabinet in the White House for atomic energy or something like that. Anyways, a very powerful lady, and an aristocratic lady. She's about 83 years old. So she just came to see me there. And she's looking around, and this Brijabasi lady who wanted to make rotis for Radharani, she came out dancing. She's in rags, really tiny. And she came up to this American lady and in the Brijabasi language ordered her to dance. And she was singing this wild Brijabasi song. And it was incredible. She started, look, this lady was a small lady, but she was really small. She was looking up and going. And my friend's mother started dancing with her. It's actually incredible. They were dancing together all over the lobby. And all these other people were dancing. People were taking... It's on video, actually. She was in bliss. She was this lady told me it later. She said, I never saw anyone so happy. This is a millionaire, a big influential politician, saying she never saw anyone so happy as this person who was homeless, whose husband and children all died. But she was happy because she was grateful that she would be able to see through one eye so that she could make her rotis for Srimati Radha. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu has given us this prayer. Natanam na janam na sundarim kavitam vaja gadisha kamaye mama janmani janmanishwari bhavata sattiro vaishya. I do not want wealth, nor do I want the beauty of the opposite sex, nor do I want fame or prestige, followers, scholarship. I don't even want liberation from suffering. Only, my Lord, I wish to serve you in any way you desire, birth after birth after birth. Since a few months ago in February when this happened, you know, things go ways that you don't like them to go. His Grace Vaisheshika Prabhu gave a magnificent seminar the day before yesterday where he was teaching us how to manage our expectations. We expect things, and the nature of the material world is you don't always get what you expect. In fact, material energy very scrutinizingly, deliberately orchestrates the entire universe just to frustrate your expectations. It's the way material nature works. It's been that way since Brahma came out of the navel of Vishnu, and it'll be that way till he goes back in. Adhyatmakari, Dayavakari, Bhautika. There's different kinds of ways we can suffer. The way people treat us, the way our bodies and mind treat us, the way until nature and the elements treat us. But then I think back of that old lady at Brijabasi. I'm going to get her name because it's all recorded in it, in our records. And she was in bliss. She was dancing in ecstasy. She was sharing her happiness with healthy millionaires of America. Materially, she had nothing. She lost everything. But she was grateful. She was grateful just for the opportunity to do the most simple service. And I think, how many opportunities I could make rotis all day long if I want. So could any of us. So what do we really have to complain about? But yet the tendency of Maya is to distract us from true devotion by finding faults with others, by finding faults with ourselves, by finding faults with the universe. This fault-finding tendency is just a way that Maya gives us an excuse to forget the blessings that we have. Only a grateful heart can actually access those blessings. This is a simple lesson of a mother. And Krishna descends into this world, and by his own example, the supreme Subhadam Sarva Bhutanam, the friend of everyone, Janmadyashayataha, the source of everything that exists. But he shows by his example, in each of its avatars, what we should value in our life. And one of the very important features is how the Lord magnifies the love of his mothers and his gratitude toward his mothers. Today we're reading about Kapila Dev. His gratitude to his mother. Now this is one of the greatest Srimad Bhagavatam classes ever given. We only get the essence that Shukadev Goswami has given us. But actually, Kapila Dev sat for days with his mother, just speaking out of gratitude and kindness. She brought him into the world and he was reciprocating. What an incredible Srimad Bhagavatam class. We've been reading it. The greatest sages, rishis, paramhamsas, have been reading these words for millions of years. And he was simply speaking to his mother. There wasn't any crowds. There wasn't any sages. Lord Ram, when he got the news that he would be banished from Ayodhya to live in the forest for 14 years, nobody in Ayodhya understood what happened. Only Kaikeyi, Dasarath, and Ram got the message. That was early in the morning, the day he was supposed to be coronated as the prince regent, the next king. The whole town was celebrating. The moment they had been waiting for, Ram would be coronated. So Ram left his father's palace, where Kaikeyi was, and walked to his mother's chambers. And Kaushalya, with her motherly love, she didn't sleep all night. She was doing pujas and yajnas and mantras and tantras and yantras and mudras and pujas all night long, just for the blessings of her son to shower upon him. She was so happy. Ram's happiness was her happiness. And when Ram came into the room, she jumped up with tears of joy and said, "Ram, this is the most auspicious, this is the most wonderful day in my life. Today you will be coronated." Ram
was broken. He had to tell her the news. He said, "My mother, I'm going to the forest for 14 years. Bharat will be the king." It was like a lightning bolt in her heart. She could not believe what she heard. The contrast from the happiest moment to her life, and a moment later, it was the most devastating, miserable moment of her life. And Ram explained everything. She was very firm. "No, forget your father. Forget Kaikeyi. You must be..." And she was arguing with him like anything. And she knew philosophy. And she was a mother. But Ram, he said, "For the purpose of Dharma, I must follow what I've been asked to do." And then she was saying, "But what about me? I will die." And finally, her last argument, if you persist on going, then I'm going with you. But he told her, "No, it's your dharma to take care of my father. I'll be back in only 14 years. It will pass very quickly." She pleaded in every possible way. But ultimately, when she saw that Ram was determined, in her heart, which was suffering bitterly, she wanted to give Ram strength. So she appeared to be very strong. And she said, "Yes, my son, you are doing the right thing. I bless you." And she gave him instructions of how to live in the forest. And she encouraged him. And then when he left the room, she collapsed. It's a beautiful story because 14 years later, after Ram had rescued Sita, I don't have time to tell all the stories in between. They were on the Pushpaka, Ravana's personal airplane. It's quite an airplane. And parks and lakes and trees. No engine, no safety belts, no vomit bags. I just chant a mantra and then say the name of where you want to go and anywhere in the universe. That's technology. Ram told Hanuman, he said, "Bharat has been ruling in the absence of my father for the last 14 years. Go there in advance, Hanumanji, and tell him I'm coming. And if you sense even the slightest particle of sadness in his heart, that he's going to have to give up the throne that he has been ruling for 14 years, then you tell me." Because even the greatest paramahamsas and the greatest sages, if they have all this power, all this wealth, all this everything, they're inevitably going to get some attachment. If you sent the slightest speck of attachment, I will go back to the forest and I will let him stay there. This was Ram. So Hanuman jumped ahead of the Pushpaka, went to Nandigram where Bharat was living, and he told him Ram is coming. Bharat cried in ecstasy. And Hanuman understood he has pure love for Ram. He wanted nothing but the pleasure of Ram. And Bharat was saying, "Where is he? Where is he?" And he
sent messengers to Ayodhya to come to greet Ram in Nandigram, a little forest outskirt place. Bara kept asking, where is he? Where is he? Hanuman said, he's coming. He's coming from this direction, from the sky. A few seconds later, but I don't see him. He's coming. He's coming. But I don't see him. And finally, from a distance, Hanuman screamed out, there, there is Ram. He's coming. And Bara was so happy. When Pushpaka landed, immediately Bara ran to Ram, and Ram ran to Bharat, and they embraced. And all the people of Ayodhya came to greet him. And Ram saw, standing alone, a little distance in a corner, was Kausalya, his mother. She was very elderly. She was just standing alone, looking at Ram and crying. Sri Ram left everybody, all the royalty, all the dignitaries, and went to his mother to take the dust of her feet, bow down to her, and thank her. Kausalya lifted him up and embraced her. This is how Ram began his rule over the world. Devaki, we know the austerities she performed in her motherly love for Krishna. It was her motherly love for Krishna, for God as her child, in her heart. To serve him, to facilitate him, she was willing to have 6 children who were murdered right in front of her eyes, and she kept having children. Why would anyone do that? Krishna was supposed to be her child. She was ready to endure any difficulty to facilitate that. And then he's born. And the same night he leaves. Hare Krishna. You go through all that, you're expecting some happiness. When the child finally comes, and he showed his forearm form, and he became a little baby on Devaki's request. And she had such motherly love. She was saying, Kamsa is an enemy of Vishnu. If he sees you with 4 arms, then he's going to know you're Vishnu. That's a mother. So disguise this form. Become a baby. And he told her, yes, take me to Nandagopur. And for the next 11 or so years, she didn't see him at all. There's a beautiful story in Srimad Bhagavatam where when Krishna was living in Dwarka, Devaki was offering her love to the Lord, and the Lord was offering his love to Devaki. And Krishna wanted to show his gratitude to his mother. What can I do for you? And as a mother, she said, these 6 children who were murdered right in front of my eyes, I don't know where they went, the souls of those children, but I long to offer them my motherly love, even once. And she said, I heard the story of how you brought Sandipani Muni's dead son back to life. So can you bring my sons too? Krishna said, come Balaram, let us find them. And Krishna Balaram, they went to Sutala Loka, where Bali Maharaj was reigning as the king. And Bali Maharaj, he offered such love and devotion. Krishna and Balaram, you offered them special seats, and so many gifts. He said, how can I serve you? Krishna said, the 6 sons of Devaki, I believe they're here somewhere.
And Bali Maharaj said, yes, they are. So Krishna took these six. It appears they were still babies, I don't know. It doesn't specifically say in the Bhagavatam. But Krishna brought the six sons back. And Devaki had such motherly affection for them. One by one, she embraced them with such love. And even though, my God, they were born years before. Now Krishna is the prince of Dwarka, and they're his older brothers. But her motherly affection, milk, began to flow from her breasts. And she took each child, embraced it, and fed him her milk. And they drank it. And each one of them attained liberation. As soon as they drank that milk, finished. Material life was finished. They had attained the ultimate perfection. Because it describes Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur that night when Krishna was sent to Gokul, Devaki was thinking that it's a long walk across the Yamuna and he might get hungry. So quickly, before she sent Krishna, she fed Krishna her milk. And therefore, anything that came from her was his Mahaprasad. This is the power of Mahaprasad. So she fed these children of hers Krishna's Mahaprasad breast. And all six of them attained liberation, perfection, and then returned to the family, to the planets of the rishis, where they had come from, before they were cursed. Krishna's natural gratitude being expressed to his mother. And we can speak for so many millenniums about Krishna's gratitude to Yashoda. He was conquered by her love. She bound him with a rope. He revealed the universe within his mouth when she was trying to feed him some milk. And just to protect the motherly nature of her love, she couldn't understand that he's God. She was thinking, maybe he's sick or something. All these mountains and oceans and these planets are in his mouth. Even I'm in his mouth. Yogamaya. He closed his mouth and smiled, and all she could see was my loving son. She just wanted to serve. And as Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, I'd like to just share an incident of his love for Sachi and Sachi's love for him. Sachi Mata, her life, her soul, her everything was Nimai. Vishwarupa had left, Jagannath Mishra had passed away. She only lived for Nimai. And one day Nimai told Nityananda Prabhu that for the sake of reaching the fallen souls and giving them this Harinam, I'm going to leave my home, shave my head, become a sannyasi. Nityananda Prabhu was practically paralyzed. How could you think like this? How could you do like this? But ultimately, whatever is your will, you will do. And Lord Chaitanya asked Nityananda, I cannot do it without your permission. And Nitai said, my Lord, whatever is your wish will be done. But please, at least discuss it with devotees first.
And what about your mother? Think about that. What about your mother? And Lord Chaitanya thought, okay, I got your blessing. And he happily went away. And it's described in Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat how Lord Nityananda, he went to a secluded place and thought about the suffering that Mother Sachi would endure if he does it. And uncontrollably cried, cried, and cried. Not thinking about himself, but thinking of Sachi, the love of a mother. And the news was gradually spreading, and just before he actually performed this pastime, one day when he was at home sitting alone, Sachi Devi, she was weeping. She couldn't eat. She couldn't sleep. Nima said, "What is wrong?" And Sachi said, "I heard what people are saying. My beloved son, please do not go. Please stay here. She said that I only live to see you and to hear you. When I see your beautiful moon-like face and lotus-like eyes, your beautiful teeth like the kunda flowers, and when I hear your words which are like showers of nectar, it's my only happiness in life. Please do not go." She said, "Just stay home with your friends and enjoy Harinam Sankirtan. You have Advaita and Srivas and Haridas and Gadadhar and Nityananda. Everyone in Navadvip here, we love you. Just stay home and enjoy your Sankirtan pastimes. You have incarnated in this world to teach religious principles. What kind of religious principle is it to leave a widowed mother to suffer and die? Is that the standard that you are going to set for the world? Your elder brother Vishwarup left me and took sannyas. Your father left me and went back to Vaikuntha. You're all I have. If you leave me, I will die. Is this your idea of how to teach the world by your example? To kill your old mother in the worst suffering? Please stay." Lord Gauranga was so moved by his mother that he was speechless for some time. He couldn't even look at her face. He had to just look down. And finally he spoke. He said, "My dear mother, we can never be separated. You are my eternal mother. You do not remember, but I remember. You were Prishni, and I was your son, Prishni Garba. You were Aditi, and I became your son, Vamanadev. You are Devahuti, and you loved me as your son, as Kapila Dev. You were Kaushalya, and I was Ram. You were Devaki and Yashoda, and I was Krishna. Please understand this, mother. We can never be separated." And then he told her that after I leave this world, or after I leave this house to establish the Sankirtan movement all over the world, you will be my mother still. And as Mother Earth, you will be the mother of my deity form. And as the tongues of my devotees, I will take birth from you as the holy names. Hare Krishna.
Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
And I'll never be separated, my mother. She was crying, but the Lord was so convincing that she was a little pacified. Until one night, it was Makar Sankranti in January, where Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu decided in his heart that he was going to leave early the next morning. And somehow or other, so many people came, all of his devotees came to his house mystically. And it was like a celebration to be with the Lord on this holy day. He was just telling them all, just always be together and chant the names of Krishna. Whether you're eating or whether you're sleeping or whether you're walking or whether you're working, whatever you may do, be doing, chant the names of Krishna. Together do kirtan. And I'll always be with you. And then giving you gifts. And late at night, after everyone left, Kolavecha Sridhar. He was the last person to come. A little pumpkin grew from the roof of his straw roof of his hut. And he came to bring that pumpkin to me. Lord Chaitanya reciprocated with Sridhar, this poverty-stricken little banana leaf seller. And he was thinking, how could I leave without honoring the gift of the love of my devotee? So he told Sachi Devi, please make kheer out of pumpkin. And just at that moment, somebody came to the house and offered some milk. So she cooked milk, pumpkin, and whatever other ingredients, and Sachi Mata. This was his last supper, as they say in Krishna. It was cooked by Sachi with the ingredients given by Sridhar. And Lord Chaitanya ate it and then went to take rest. But Sachi Mata did not rest. She felt in her motherly intuition, he's going to leave me. She sat at the doorway all night long. And as everyone was sleeping, Lord Chaitanya walked out of the room and came to the door. And Sachi Devi, incessantly weeping, Sri Chaitanya, Lord Gauranga, held her hands very gently and tried to solace her. Started to reveal his heart. Said, my dear mother, for every aspect of my life, you have maintained me. You have nourished me. Because of you, I studied and became a great scholar. Because of you, I have become a devotee of Krishna and have tasted the sweetness of love of Krishna. Without you caring about me, I would have nothing in this world. You never concerned yourself the slightest for your own happiness. You did everything only for my pleasure. The amount of love, the amount of devotion, the amount of service that you rendered to me at every moment, I cannot pay back in millions and millions of kalpas. This is the Lord's feeling of gratitude to his mother. for the service that you have rendered at any single moment, that moment I cannot possibly reciprocate. Even in a span of millions and millions of kalpas, days of Brahma. But you are so merciful, my brother, that it is by your mercy only that I can be freed from that debt. But even lifetime after lifetime after lifetime, I can never pay you back. And then the Lord explained how Krishna is independent. He brings people together and then he separates people. That is his own inconceivable will beyond ourselves. But I promise you, Mother, that I shall take care of all your worldly and spiritual needs forever. You have nothing to fear. I will always be with you. Sachi Devi did not say a word. Silently, like a statue, torrents and rivers of tears were just pouring from her eyes. And after saying again, "I owe you everything and I will take care of you," he asked for permission for him to go. And while crying silently, she nodded her head. "This was your will, my son. Whatever makes you happy." And the last thing he did before leaving home, he bowed to his mother. He took the dust of her feet and put it on his head. He circumambulated her several times and departed. Now when Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu took sannyas in Katva, by the arrangement of Lord Nityananda Prabhu, he was brought back to Shantipur, where Sachi Devi came to meet him. When she saw her son, his elegant, flowing black hair was cut off. It was nothing but a shaven head. And his wonderful clothes that she would arrange for him, they were gone. It was just drab sannyasi saffron. And his beautiful ornaments were gone. Just had a begging pot and a danda. Her heart was breaking. And Nimai went and offered his dandavats, his prostrated obeisances to his mother. Here he is, the crest jewel of all sannyasis. And he sat on his mother's lap. And she embraced him and bathed him with her tears. And Nimai said, "I must have been a madman. Everything I have is only because of you. Whatever devotion to Krishna I have, I owe it all to your example. Now, if you like, I'll stay home." How Sachi Devi would like him to stay home. But her selfless motherly love, she was willing to endure her heart being broken into trillions of pieces if it assisted the Lord's mission. If you stay home, people will criticize you. Swamiji stays at his mother's house. You want to go to Vrindavan, but the same Krishna that's in Vrindavan is living in Puri as Jagannath. So go there. Then I will hear about you. So on his mother's order, Lord Chaitanya gave up the deepest wish and dream of his life to go to Vrindavan. He went to Puri. And there are so many stories in Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Sri Chaitanya Bhagavat, of Lord Chaitanya reciprocating with Sachimata. He would send her prasad. He would send Damodar Pandit to tell her stories, to give her all sorts of prasad and all kinds of news. And then he'd come back, and one time Lord Chaitanya said, "How is my mother?" And Damodar Pandit chastised him. "How dare you ask that question? She's the mother of devotion. Whatever devotion you have is only because of her grace, and you're asking how she is? How ungrateful of you." Lord Chaitanya said, "Whatever you're saying is true." And he sent Kal Krishna there to tell her all about the South Indian tour, Nityananda Centre. And it's described, Lord Chaitanya was always present in four places. When there was kirtan at Srivasa's house, when Nityananda danced, when Sachi Mata cooked. What was the fourth one? Raghava Pandit, yes. When he and his sister, Devianti, prepared prasad. And there are many beautiful stories for Lord Chaitanya's central message. She would cook Lord Chaitanya's favorite preparation and put it on the altar. And then she'd come, this is when Mahaprabhu was in Puri, and she'd come back and she'd see there was nothing in the bowl was on the altar. And she was so humble that she thought that she forgot to put the preparation in the bowl. So she would run outside and fill it again and bring it back in and offer it, and then go outside thinking, "Oh, this is my Nima, he liked this preparation," and she'd come back in and it would be empty. And she'd think, "God, what's wrong with me? I'm getting old, I'm losing my memory, I forgot to put it in, I cooked it, I forgot to put it in the bowl again." And Lord Chaitanya sent her a message all the way from Puri, "I'm eating it. It's empty because I'm eating it. I told you, I come there every day to Navadvip just to accept your motherly love." So Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is a devotee who taught us how to be, he's the Lord who taught us how to be a devotee by his example. Gratitude to Mother. And I think that's the origin of Mother's Day. Srila Prabhupada explains that a mother's love for child is the purest kind of love in this material world. The spirit of a mother's love of a child is very much, to understand it, a bridge to bring us into the spiritual realm of love. Sabai pung sang paro dharmo yato bhaktir hoksha jaya hoit ki akrati hata yidatma supraseded. Krishna tells the supreme dharma is transcendental loving service to the Lord, Sri Krishna. Such love must be unmotivated by any egoism, unmotivated by any selfishness, by any personal agenda or desire, and uninterrupted by any circumstance. And Srila Prabhupada would explain that how a mother's love gives us an indication of that nature. Because what does a mother get from a baby? I
I'm a Swami, so I see it from my perspective. Sometimes the Swami's perspective is quite disgusting. Baby's drooling. And the baby's passing stool, and the mother's cleaning it, and the baby's passing urine, and the mother's covered with it. And the mother's happy. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu used this as an example of pure love. When Sanatana Goswami had those diseases all over his body from drinking water in the Jarikanda forest, and Lord Chaitanya had him physically, he was suffering, he was itching, it was oozing, it was paining, and it smelled miserable. And he was like that for about 8 months. The Lord could have cured him, but he likes to teach through his devotees. And every time that Lord Chaitanya would meet Sanatana Goswami, he would embrace him. And all this blood and pus would get smeared on Lord Chaitanya's beautiful golden body. And Sanatana would try to run away, but Lord Chaitanya had long arms. He always captured him. And then one day, Sanatana Goswami said, I'm going to Vrindavan. Because I talked with Jagadananda Pandit. And Jagadananda Pandit, I told him how much I'm making aparads to you by getting all this stuff on you. So he said, well, the Lord's already told me to go to Vrindavan, so go. Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he chastised Jagadananda. Said, Jaga, that impudent neophyte, who is he to instruct you? You are fit to be my guru. And Sanatana was... And then Lord Chaitanya told him, he said, let me reveal my heart to you. He said, those pus and blood and oozing stuff that gets on me, I'll tell you how I experience. He said, just like a mother, her love for her child is so deep that when the child passes urine and stool on the mother, she smells it as a mixture of sandalwood, musk, camphor, and a beard. Because of her love, it's nectar. Mothers, do you experience that? You don't have to raise your hand. It's the standard of motherly love. It doesn't smell that way to your nose. That way in your heart. Because in bhakti, it's very, very deep and profound. In bhakti, at the beginning, we see through the eyes of scripture to awaken this love of God, through the eyes of Prabhupada and the great acharyas. And as our devotion awakens, we see through our heart, we hear through our heart, we taste through our heart. When we're eating prasad, it's Krishna's grace. Raghunath Das Goswami was eating what the cows spit out. Those broken, rejected, decomposed rice. And when Lord Chaitanya tasted it, he said, I have never tasted such nectar. He was tasting with his heart. We feel through our heart. We smell through our heart. When a devotee smells incense, it's not just a sweet fragrance. He tastes Krishna through the nose, through the heart. He becomes intoxicated. That's bhakti. all of our senses are actually perceiving everything through the love of our heart. So in this way, yes, the stool of your baby, whatever color or consistency it is, is the topmost fragrance offered to the deity, according to Lord Chaitanya Chatushmada or something like that. Sandalwood, musk, a guru, and camphor. Now, Swamis don't have that realization. And here in class, you know, so babies are, if you go to India to a Bhagavad Kata, it's usually at least 2/3, sometimes 95% females. And I remember I was in Surat once, and there was about 500 people to my class. It was in the evening class. 499 ladies. One man holding a baby. I was lucky it wasn't on YouTube. So I gave a class. I was so enthusiastic. And then after the class, I'm just curious, Mother Jesus, where's all the men? And they told me there's a cricket game. Now, these ladies, to give up a cricket game to come and hear Hari Katha, that's Sarvadharma. Well, they surrender, wouldn't you? It's the natural tendency that ladies love to hear Krishna Katha, and in numbers more than men. But yet, you know, ladies come all enthusiastic for Krishna Katha, they have their little baby. And they immediately run outside. So many sacrifices, every moment. And every single one of us, you know, who are we? Our mother stayed up all night. You know, we were in the womb of our mothers. Like, you know, as a Swami, I don't know what that feels like, but I can imagine. You know, if I eat too many chickpeas, I can't move my stomach. So imagine an 8 or 9 pound human being in your stomach. And recently I met this one lady, where was it? Somewhere. And she was in New Jersey. She had triplets. 3 human beings in her stomach at the same time. And you know, you start getting sick and they start kicking you. And you just surviving just because of love, natural love. And then the real austerity comes when it's born. Totally 100% dependent on you. And they cry. We were doing this, every one of us. We would not be alive if our mother didn't love us. You know, she could have killed us in the womb because it's so uncomfortable. She could have just dismissed us when we were babies. And a devotee never, ever, ever forgets anyone who has ever done anything to help them. That's the quality of the devotee. It's not that we're just grateful to Vaishnavas. A devotee is grateful. Grateful to anyone who has ever helped us. And our mother was saving our life at every moment for years, for our first years. giving us a foundation. Srila Prabhupada, how much he loved his mother and father. And he explains, and what they gave me to the fullest degree, my Guru Maharaj has gotten. And actually, in meeting Srila Prabhupada and coming in contact with Srila Prabhupada and his devotees, we understand what we could be so grateful for. We have a realization. Krishna's love comes to a mother in a very special way in this world because it's selfless. And one of Srila Prabhupada's most blessed, intimate, dearest disciples, daughters, someone who was really a universal mother for our whole movement, was Yamuna Devi Prabhu. And by Prabhupada and Krishna's inconceivable arrangement, were taken from us on this physical platform quite recently. And what a mother she was. She had no biological children. But she really felt every devotee of Srila Prabhupada and all generations were like her own children. I remember the first time I saw her. I had just come down from the Himalayas where I was living with all these very, very staunch, austere sadhus. It's a hard, a really hard life the way they live. And I happened to be at this cross Maidan before I met Prabhupada there. I came in and somebody gave me a Krishna book. It's a long story, but I was very happy. He didn't give it to me, he let me borrow it. Because I had no money. And devotees don't usually give you books. I told him, I'll beg for it. He'll say, okay, go out and beg. But in the meanwhile, he wanted to give me like a sample, so I was sitting and reading. And as I was reading, it was during the day, there was hardly anyone in my big tent. But on the stage was Yamuna Devi. She was all alone. He was wearing a sari and playing a harmonium and singing. It was so beautiful. And her eyes were closed. It was so deep, with such devotion, such emotion. She sang for hours every day. And gradually more and more people were coming. And almost everybody I saw was hypnotized by her devotion. And I remember I was thinking at that time, something so special is in this lady's heart. Such a devotion, such a love, such a grace that she personifies. That same Yamuna Devi, most of these Nagababas and sadhus and rishis and sages and meditators, they seemed insignificant compared to her. I was anxious to find out who's her guru. But he was going to come hours and hours later. That was my first meeting with Yamuna Devi. I was afraid to approach her because I thought she was some sort of deity or something. But I did approach her, which is very wonderful. And then, of course, after some time traveling, I ended up living in Vrindavan. Prabhupada came, and I saw that Gurudas and Yamuna were
was always giving me prasad. What a mother she was. First time I ever had Krishna prasad in my life was there at Cross Maidan in Bombay. When Malati Devi came to me and offered me an incredible plate of prasad with a smile and said, "Take this prasad." And I was so happy because I was really hungry. She was so busy. Saraswati was running around all over the place, and she was catching Saraswati, and in between she was doing so many... Malati Devi, she's like, when she does devotional service, it's kind of like the feminine version of the universal form. Such an impact, because I was just wandering around seeing all my old Babaji Sadhu and Vrishabhasi friends, but I came there to meet them, and I was sitting in a little room in an upstairs, just a simple place, and I was just overhearing them talking. Every single sentence was about pleasing Srila Prabhupada. Prabhupada wanted like this. Srila Prabhupada wanted like this. We should do like this for Prabhupada. And Yamuna Devi, in whatever she said, it was everything with such emotion, such devotion for Srila Prabhupada. And I remember feeling at that time, because I had seen so many devotees, so many paramahamsas and great saints in Vrindavan. The degree of total dedication, surrender, and 24-hour-a-day meditation on Guru. This is what she embodied. Her every breath, her every heartbeat was offering to Prabhupada. And that deeply affected me. Because, you know, I have to be honest. Because of my anarthas, I love Prabhupada, but I kind of didn't know how to deal with ISKCON devotees. Because living in Vrindavan, I'm not like that anymore. Sometimes. But seeing Yamuna, that transformed me. This is what ISKCON is. Prabhupada, you're not only my guru, but I'm an ISKCON devotee. I remember thinking that, just by seeing her love for Prabhupada. It had a transformative effect on my life to this day. And what she accomplished, and how she was so humble about it. What an unbelievable example. How senior she was. Her younger sister was the first initiated disciple of Prabhupada. She spent a whole day cooking with Srila Prabhupada.
in 1966 and 26nd Avenue, just the two of them. Oh, by giving her personal instructions how to make puri dough and all kinds of things. And then she went back to California, and at the end of 66, beginning of 67, Mukunda Maharaj and Janaki came, and they just told her Prabhupada's coming, and she was right there with Shamsundar and Guru Das and Malati Devi. And just think of what these six people had done. If we just look at 26nd Avenue, she was a part of that, and Frederick Street Temple in San Francisco. It's not just what happened there. As instruments of Prabhupada, the people that became devotees in those two places went all over the world. You know, Vishnu Jana Maharaj became a devotee by Yamuna and the others' influences in San Francisco. And he spread Krishna consciousness all over America. Tamal Krishna Goswami became a devotee there. She was like their mother. They established Krishna consciousness in Europe, in India. Madhu Visa established Krishna consciousness in Australia. And they themselves established in England, India. Practically the whole world was very much under the influence of her preaching and her five other associates wherever they went. What a death we owe them. The death of Prabhupada. And her singing. Shamsundar Prabhu told me that George Harrison said that she had the greatest voice. And he could make her a world famous singer. He could do it. Now, when George Harrison says that, you have to take it very seriously. Because he was still in the Beatles at that time. Anything the Beatles wanted. He said, I can make you one of the greatest musical personalities in the world. She just wanted to serve Prabhupada. She didn't want that. Prabhupada called him to India. She just went home. But her singing, the Hare Krishna mantra, what she sings, it was the number one song in many countries of Europe. Govinda Hare Purusha. Srila Prabhupada said it was a transcendental devotional symphony of devotion. And some devotees complained. They stopped playing Govinda Hare Purusha. I think it was L.A. And Prabhupada said, why are you not playing? And they said, because, you know, there's brahmacharis and sannyasins and it's a woman's voice. Prabhupada said it is a transcendental symphony of devotion. It should be played in every temple every day. In India, she was teaching us, I can't remember the number, but she was teaching us all the different ways that Srila Prabhupada sang the morning melody. Such details. And she would sing them so beautifully. like about 10 or 11 different ways that Prabhupada sang the morning melody. To me, it kind of all, I always thought it was the same morning melody. But she scrutinizingly, with such love and devotion, studied every intonation of Prabhupada's voice when she would listen to him, feeling his love, feeling his devotion, feeling his compassion, and emulated it. And she was singing these, and it was like, just like listening to Prabhupada in a female's voice. It was unbelievable. And then I learned so many things. I can't sing that way. But that's just how absorbed she was. There's a famous statement from Prabhupada told, I think, Tamal Krishna Goswami or somebody, that she has attained bhava. It's love of God, love of Krishna. And Prabhupada told her to cook for him. She was so absorbed in learning how to cook for Prabhupada. When she found out what Prabhupada liked, she would find every possible detail of how to make it. She would go to people's houses, learn how to cook. She would go to Prabhupada's godbrothers to learn how to cook. She would go to Prabhupada's sister to learn how to cook, just to make everything perfect for Prabhupada. How many of us have that enthusiasm? And Prabhupada loved her cooking. And as an offering to Srila Prabhupada, she wrote a cookbook, Lord Krishna's Cuisine, something like that. And it was the number one rated cookbook in the world. And she talks about Krishna and Prabhupada. Unbelievable. It's just her absorption in bhakti. And the rewrite, when she wrote, it was calligraphy. In the early days, Srila Prabhupada would have her write the signs and everything. He would, we heard the other day, I think from Daini Shakti. Time, please, must end class. Brought by Raj Mohan. But this is definitely Malati's calligraphy. So much feeling and attention, devotion. And she was really a mother. But yet, you know, she could have such fame. But she always just wanted to be in the background. And in my interactions with her, she was everyone's well-wisher. She just wanted the best for everyone. There was no envy. Her happiness was in seeing others flourishing in pleasing Prabhupada. She spent about 4 months at Bhaktivedanta Hospital this last year. And she was so appreciative, so grateful for everything. But I had many different little arguments with her. Because she always wanted to leave. She was critically ill. When she stepped in the hospital, the doctors told me she was 99% dead. It was impossible that she could be living in her condition. She had all these fluids. God, they drained out like gallons of fluid within a couple days, and her heart wasn't working, and none of her organs were working, and she wasn't getting oxygen. It was unbelievable. And yet she would say, you know, I have to leave. I'd say, why do you have to leave? She'd say, because I don't like being served. Everyone's serving me. She was dead serious. She would cry, saying, it hurts me that people are serving me. I want to serve them. It was so sincere. I said, Yamana Devi, please, the greatest service you can do for them is letting them serve you. Don't you understand? They see Prabhupada in you. You personify Prabhupada's love, his compassion, his devotion. This is the closest they've ever gotten to serving Prabhupada directly is helping you. Give them this chance. It's the happiness of their life. She said, oh, well, that's what Prabhupada wants me to do. Then a few days later, she wanted to leave. They're serving me. This is her so genuine. She's really a mother for everyone. And I remember she would tell me sometimes how she felt one of the things that were so unfavorable in our movement is this consciousness where devotees feel entitled to receive. Because I've done service for so many years, I am entitled to get something. And devotees demand. Because of this reason or that reason or this reason or that reason, I am entitled to this money, I'm entitled to this position, I'm entitled to this respect, I'm entitled. She said this mentality simply spoils the whole spirit of bhakti. She said if you feel entitled to something, you can't be grateful. Trinadapi sumicheya, tanor ivasej, amani namanadena kirtaniya sadhana. And she was saying this with such genuine concern for our society. If we want to taste the nectar of the holy name, we have to be humble and grateful. And whatever service we render, she was saying we shouldn't be thinking, I deserve something material back for that. That spoils and neutralizes the effects of what we've done. Whatever service we render, it's for Krishna. Neha vikramanasu sti, it's eternal. She would have tears in her eyes when she would speak this way. Because she just cared so much. She was a mother for all of us. And her sacrifice, her devotion, and those of so many other senior mothers, many of them, are here today. It's because of that very much that we have the chance to render service to Krishna. And Yamuna Devi, it seems that Krishna took her just the way she wanted to go. Just simple, chanting japa, all alone. The smile on her face. Prabhupada took her back to Krishna's pastimes. That's my understanding. So on this day, let us offer our deepest and serious gratitude to this wonderful mother and to all of the wonderful mothers who has given us birth, who have served Srila Prabhupada's mission selflessly, even sometimes under very, very difficult, unappreciated conditions. Let us offer our gratitude, our love to them, to you. Happy Mother's Day.
That's it.